Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Start welcoming everyone to our very, very first Lead with Love Summit. I'm Laurel Donnellan, and I am the proud founder and CEO of Compassionate Leader Circle. I'm here with my amazing colleagues, Tracy Stahl, who is our Chief Growth Officer. And when we talk about growth with her, she's growing our community and our business, but also helping all of our community members grow and our team grow. And this is Sarah Feely, who is our Chief Learning Officer. Sarah is responsible for a lot of things, including standards for design and delivery and research. She loves research. She's going to be sharing some of her genius with us later. So welcome to the Lead with Love Summit. I'm just going to talk a little bit about why we're doing this and why we do the work we do. As I was preparing for today, I was very aware that this has been a hard year for a lot of people. It's been a hard year for compassionate leaders that I admire. I talk to a lot of them and I read a lot about them and I write a lot about them. And I don't think we can talk about compassion and love this year without pointing out that there's a lot of cruelty in the world, and compassion and love is the antidote for that. So one of the reasons we're having this summit and launching this, we hope to have one every year when we launch our nominations for Compassionate Leader Circle Awards, is to gather people together that are like-minded and care about compassion and love, whether it be in their communities or in the workplace, and provide a forum for hope. So we are here to lift you up and lift ourselves up and tap into hope and healing and celebrate compassionate leaders. I know there is lots of people all over the world who are getting up every day and thinking about their community, the people that they serve, the children that they teach, the children that they're raising, the people in their communities who need food, and they're doing the right thing. And I think because of the way our media works, we don't necessarily cover or shine a bright light on those people enough. So we're here today to do that. Sarah's going to talk about why kind leaders win and why compassion is not only ethical, but effective as a strategy. Chelsea's going to tell us more about our lovely Compassionate Leader Circle Award honorees and how you can get involved in that. And she also has gifts for everyone. So I guess this is our holiday party too. A little bit about Compassionate Leader Circle. We are a learning development company and media company. So we help organizations, individuals, universities, for-profit, not-for-profits, find solutions and customize solutions to help leaders lead with love. And we're very proud of that work. In addition, we have a podcast. So this today is a special edition of our podcast. I also write for Forbes, and I'm always looking for compassionate leaders to write about. So send those on over. Without further ado, I will pass it on to Sarah.
Thank you, Laurel. Welcome, everyone. I'm so happy to see you here on this beautiful Friday. I just want to start by saying I pivoted my career a few times and feel like I have finally found my place on so many levels, and I'm just so grateful to be here. I want to highlight our approach. These are our three S's, not to be confused with the seven C's, which we'll talk about here shortly. But these are at the core of what we do and how we approach what we do. We're strategic, so we are not just going to throw like blanket concepts at the wall and hope they stick. We really collaborate with people, companies, organizations to figure out, like, what are your business needs and how can we align your people needs with your business needs? And so everything we do is customized. We're also soulful. So we will always talk about and leverage the power of compassion, love, and purpose. I think hopefully we're seeing a bit of a shift in that those used to be considered sort of soft, nice to haves, and they're actually incredibly powerful and really deliver real business impact. And then scientific. I in my free time read academic articles, which is so cool. So I like to deliver and make sure that we are maintaining sort of the science and research backed standards and insights into what we do. Without further ado, I'm just going to talk about a little bit of the science, the data that's on our mind. I always struggle between like how much detail do I get into on this because I can get really excited. So I'm going to go pretty high level here. And if you want to stay on afterward and get into more detail, I'd love to talk to you about more detail. And then we'll always forward some references so you can look at sort of in depth the things that I'm talking about here. So what's on our mind? First of all, we did a very cool partnership with a not-for-profit out of UC Berkeley, new friends and partners of ours through the Greater Good Science Center. They held a very cool event this week called Why Kind Leaders Win, which is based around some pretty groundbreaking research by some scientists, researchers out of University of Washington, which I'll get to in a moment, but they are our new friends. And if you want really cool research back insights into well-being and leadership, go sign up for their stuff. Insights are great. So what is Why Kind Leaders Win? And I'll pause by saying this event that happened on Monday comes at a really important time. Many of us compassion leaders, the world's a tough place. And there's a little bit of a do nice guys finish last? An old adage, which I hate. And no, they actually don't. So here's the research. Two accounting professors out of the University of Washington looked at 3,500 public company CEOs and determined which of those leaders were pro-social. And pro-social is sort of like a scientific blanket term for kind, right? There's a lot of facets to pro-sociality, and there's some really like concrete ways to measure pro-sociality. So they looked at the pro-sociality of 3,500 CEOs. They dug into the public company financials to determine that without question, a very, very strong correlation between a CEO's level of pro-sociality and a number of key performance indicators and financial performance of the company, which is maybe not a surprise to the folks in this room, but it's really nice to see that what is the right thing to do is also the business sense thing to do. So we've had some new friends over there at the Greater Good Science Center. So that's on our mind. We're also, you know, I think, and Laurel alluded to this, something I love to talk to people about is this idea of, and there's this book, excuse me, there's this sales book, I think it was a bestseller, it says, hope is not a strategy. And it has always like sort of fired me up because it depends on your definition of hope, right? If you go lock yourself in a closet and you hope the world's going to change, well, it's not really a strategy. But actually, if you look at hope as it is studied in the social sciences, it is a measurable thing. It is a three-part framework that has real actionable sense to it. There's three facets of hope theory. And this was developed in the 90s by Schneider and his colleagues. There's three facets. Goals. What do you want to change? What's bothering you? What change do you want to see in the world? Agency. So this belief that I, Sarah, you, Laurel, you, Chelsea, anyone in this room has the agency, has the willpower to go out and make change. And then the third component are the pathways. I have the way power. I know the pathway to enable my change. And we think it's really important, particularly, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there in the world. And you say, okay, so kind leaders win. So compassion and love are great. What do I do about it? And if you take these three facets of hope strategy, you can get really granular and very incremental into how you can actually enact and enable change. And that's through sort of these this trifecta of hope strategy. So that's a really, that's something high on our list and very uplifting. Along the same lines is something called self-determination theory. I'm not going to get into like the real, the nitty-gritty of self-determination theory, but it's this basic concept that we weave into our work with leaders and organizations, which is this idea that three things make someone feel like they have self-determination. They have control over their impact and their success and their well-being in the world. You have autonomy, which is the ability to be self-directed. You have competence. You have the ability and the wherewithal to get where you want to go, or if you don't have the skills, you can go get them. And then relatedness, which is I have close ties to the people around me and I have trusting relationships. And the research shows that if you have a sense of autonomy, a sense of competence, and a sense of relatedness, you feel like you have control over the impact you can make in the world around you. So this is baked into everything we do. And lastly, I'm so thrilled to announce that Laurel and I have finished the advanced reader's copy of our guidebook for leaders, The Compassionate Leader's Companion, 12 Proven Practices to Unlock Remarkable Results. This is 26 years of Laurel's genius, a lot of research, academic and scientific research, our practical sort of wins and losses in a guidebook to help leaders build compassion skills, gain a sense of self-determination, and do something about it in the palm of your hand. So that's a little bit of my nerding out. I'm always here to answer any questions you might have. And I'll pass it over to Chelsea.
I had one question for you. What was like, what's the most like exciting thing that you learned while writing the book? Like, did you have like an aha moment?
What I learned is in terms of like process, just for myself, is like, we do a lot of this work with individuals in pockets. This is the culmination of so much sort of like tacit knowledge, getting it all together in 12 parts in a framework in one place was so powerful in like crystallizing the impact that we can have on people when it's all sort of put in a really cohesive way. And I would also say that I learned that in you know, all these concepts that are interconnected, compassion, self-compassion, and compassion for others are truly at the core of enabling so many of these impactful things. So thanks for that question, Chelsea.
If it's okay, I'd like to answer that question too. I learned that I have a co-writer in my life, which I've never had before. So I have my writing soulmate. And that's pretty exciting. I've only written things on my own before. And I think what we want to offer in this book, not everyone can afford a fancy consulting firm like us to come in and do fancy things or customize things or, you know, in-depth things. But this book gives compassionate leadership and a roadmap to anyone who wants to bring compassionate leadership into their organization, no matter what their size. And Sarah and I are going to write a second book that's going to be more of a storybook about compassionate leaders. That's a companion to this book. And we just hope that, you know, people who are in organizations that may feel lonely, feel less alone and have a toolbox that's affordable to do the work in their organization.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I love being part of this team. I'm Chelsea, the newest member of the CLC team. And Sarah, I love that you get to wear the nerdy hat and do all the real detailed work so I can just, you know, bounce around and tell people about it. It's glorious. But what I'm here to do today is to talk a little bit about the awards that are coming up and to talk about the 7 C's of a compassionate leader. And I think the best way to do that is to talk about how some of our past leaders have embodied what the 7 C's actually make up. So I'm just going to kind of talk through what the 7 C's look like. And then one of the past honorees that we've had that really embodies what those attributes are. So the first attribute is compassionate. So when we talk about being compassionate, we're talking about using your influence to prevent and alleviate the suffering of others. Compassion is the choice really to see people and then to act. So the action is very important when it comes to being a compassionate leader. So Kevin Perkins is a great example. He's an executive at McCain Foods. And his job, he was tasked with hiring people from across the world and bringing them to Canada to work. And, you know, his relationship with them didn't end once, you know, they started their job. When they came here, he noticed that some of them were really struggling at home and he didn't ignore it. Instead, he listened to them and he took action. He partnered with local food resources, with faith communities, housing groups, all to create long-term support systems for these new people who were relocating to a new country. Kevin has showed us that compassion is not just sentimental, it's structural and it's action. The next attribute is confident, which is really just believing in your vision and yourself enough to get you to where you want to go. So confidence is grounded in purpose, not necessarily ego. And one of the best examples that we have is from someone who isn't a CEO or a seasoned executive. It's actually a high school student. Curta Praya participated in the Take the World Forward Fellowship and created a nutritionally balanced forage to combat malnutrition after witnessing food insecurity in slums. So she was able to partner with MIT to refine her project and imagine a more accessible healthcare system for everyone that she could touch. So her confidence reminds us that leadership isn't about age, it's about conviction and doing the right thing when you need to. So next we have collaborative, which really is creating solutions with and not for people. So that's a really important distinction. So collaboration means believing that the best solutions are things that we come to together. So Lena Green embodies this. She has been a past winner of ours. So she has a background in law, technology, policy, education, and she co-founded a group called Angels of Impact to end poverty by investing in women-led and community-rooted programs. So their work now reaches across the globe in the Asia Pacific, Singapore, New Zealand, and also in the US. And she has showed us that collaboration builds not only good outcomes, but it helps us feel belonging. It makes us feel part of a community. So next, our fourth attribute is contemplative, which really, when you think about it, it's leading from a place of reflection, wisdom, and presence. It's kind of the discipline of pausing and listening deeply to yourself. And when I think about some of the leaders that we've honored in the past, it's Nancy Hines that comes to mind. She is the founder of a hospice house, and having recently gone through, you know, losing a loved one and going through the hospice program, this one really hit home to me because it's really, really beautiful work. So after losing her husband in the early 1980s, she opened her own home to care for people who were dying that didn't necessarily have a place to go. So she reflected on a need in the community and a need that she found herself and really was able to make change in her community by leaning into that. So our fifth attribute is civility, which is respecting dignity, even if in conflict and controversy. It's understanding that you're not always going to agree with everyone, but you can find a place of respect to work from. And this is a place where I think we all can, you know, where we can all strive to do a little better. So I want to talk about Devin Henry, who, in my opinion, is incredibly brave. So what he decided to do is he agreed to lead the removal of nearly 24 Confederate monuments across the South. So that is a really controversial role to step in and to do with grace and dignity. And Devin did. It's really a beautiful story. So he transformed these statues into art and he used the proceeds to support nonprofits. So not only, you know, did he make his community more, you know, collective and cohesive, but he turned that profit into money to help his community. So next is curiosity, which is really just being able to ask better questions to really expand what's possible. So there's a great quote that I heard that says that there's a compassionate solution to every problem. And if you haven't found one, you're just not looking hard enough. So I want you to kind of think about that you can always find a compassionate solution if you're really looking. And so Josh Tetrick is a great example of this. He's the co-founder of Just Meat. And at the crux of what he does is he started teaching in Nigeria and South Africa and really, you know, saw a need for a different way to think about how we provide meat to the rest of the world. So he created a product. It's plant-based and it's much better for the environment. And so he was really curious about how to make a change in the world. He saw a way to do it and he stepped in and he did it. Laurel has talked to me quite a bit about Josh, and it's really been a journey for him. And so it's really, you know, it's really exciting after the past couple of years to, you know, to see him in really big global markets.
Chelsea, let me just chime in here and add that he also worked with scientists to find out how to cultivate meat and seafood in laboratories. So in addition to plant-based products, he has created actual proteins, chicken, and other things to come, and recently went through the FDA process, and now you can find Just Meat Chicken in Walmart. So a little update on him.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. All right. So our last attribute is courage. So courage really is just compassion with the heartbeat. It's the ability to see the need to help and to step in and do it. So this great girl named Francesca, who founded a group called Inspiring My Generation, where she turned her actual experience of being a suicide survivor into actionable things for the people around her. So she, you know, turned her mission into reducing suicide through awareness. She has a podcast called Normalizing the Conversation and has a great series of mental health workbooks. And she, you know, she's very young and she just saw a need that for the people around her and really stepped in and did it. As we kind of move away from these, I just want you to think about how these seven stories remind us that compassionate leadership, it's not soft. It's not abstract. It's in these tiny examples of love that we see throughout the world. And together, you know, they can create something really beautiful as long as we lean into them.
Nels, this is a question for you or Laurel. Laurel, do you recommend that someone work on a 7C that like comes naturally to them, that is their strength, or maybe one that they find is maybe less of a strength?
Well, we believe in appreciative inquiry and working on your strengths. Either one is good. I just happen to be struggling with a challenge of mine. So I'm going to be sharing one that's challenging. But I think for today, if everyone, you could pick something you find challenging, you could pick something that's a strength you want to build. So either way, we win. I think over time, these are universal evergreen principles that you can't go wrong with addressing over time all seven. Thank you, Sarah and Chelsea, both for putting your heart and soul into this work and loving me and this so much. I appreciate you both. We'd love to spend some time answering questions at this point. If you have any comments or questions, please put them into the chat and we will address those. I'll give Sarah a question while we're waiting for others to chime in. Sarah, can you talk a little bit about the panelists that were on the Kind Leader stage? Because I think that's kind of interesting. Who were the people that chosen for the, because that was also an inaugural event.
Yeah, like our friends are saying, it's the first event and the beginning of a movement. I think what made it really interesting is they had three very corporate senior leaders. So two CEOs and a CHRO of a big global company. Then they had PhD research scientists who study the science of compassion, the neuroscience of compassion. So you had a really wonderful combination of real world experiences, practices with very senior leaders mixed with, well, like, what's the science behind that, right? It was like fascinating. For example, someone was talking about like, what's with the lack of compassion? Is that learned? Are you born compassionate? And we all know, practically speaking from our work, that you can absolutely teach compassion because we've been doing it for decades. But you had a CEO sort of talking about his experience in developing direct reports. And then Emiliana, the neuroscientist of compassion, said, absolutely. I've actually done a decade's worth of research that compassion is both innate to us because we are born to be social individuals. And it is also, I it can be learned and taught and cultivated over time. So it was a beautiful mix of like practitioners, leaders, and scientists.
Just to add to that, I think one of the things that excites me the most about compassion is when you look at the science behind how it travels through your body and how empathy hits, you know, your stress systems and compassion hits your reward system. So not only are you making the world better, you know, for someone else, you're making your soul better too. That was so powerful to me when I learned that.
Yeah. I think changing the name of the company to Compassionate Leading Circle came at a time when I was doing research about empathy and found out that empathy, feeling other people's feelings, can actually create burnout and stress. And we talk about compassion being action, right? So if you're actually taking action from that place of empathy, it's actually better for your health. So compassion is good for your health as a, you know, it's also good for the world and good for your workplace. So it has many benefits.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, Sarah, but will you talk a little bit about the accounting, the woman in accounting? I just thought that was incredibly interesting.
Yeah, right. So I was like, how did a PhD in accounting get on this stage where we're talking about kind leaders? They're actually writing their third article. So their first article was like, they're looking at business performance. And they started looking at facets of CEOs that seem to be coming up in common. So the first measure they use as a proxy of pro-sociality was, are these CEOs using their free time giving back and giving both financial but time-related, donating their time? And then they said, okay, but that might not be like a real accurate pro-sociality proxy. Let's look at how many time in a public setting, in an investor relations call, in interviews, are these 3,500 CEOs giving credit to their team and their people when they've performed well? And importantly, how often are they taking the blame when things are going poorly or casting the blame on others? They looked at like a lot of these like almost proxies for pro-sociality and found like resounding results that these 35 out of these, you know. So anyway, how did this woman in accounting come to this? It's because they were digging through financial investor relations data and company performance metrics, like a very sort of, you know, accountant tactical level, and realized that there was this sort of pro-sociality theme to it. It's really fascinating, sort of backing into it.
Gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, and I thought that was I think one of the measurements, they watched these quarterly earning meetings and other things, and were looking for the leaders complimenting and giving credit to other people, right? So that's, you know, part of compassionate leadership is not taking the credit for everything, which is important.
Laurel, we have a question. We have a question from Aaron. My one word definition of leadership is love. Aaron, we love you. as I help executives become better leaders, I find it hard sometimes to get them past using love in the business place. There are challenges with various cultures and with a lot of men. How do you suggest making a compelling case for change?
I would recommend that you expand kind of the way that you think about love. So C.S. Lewis has a great book called The Four Loves that talks about how love is actually, you know, the way that we think about love is very small. And when you think about love being affection, being friendship, being romantic, of course, that we know, and then, you know, being a divine form of love, the reality is that affection is what connects us all. And that's really what love is. We just don't think about it that way. So I would encourage you to research different ways that you can talk about love to kind of broaden the way that your group thinks about it, so that we don't just, you know, think about two people in our life that we decide that we love. Just try and broaden that scope.
In our Compassionate Leaders Guide, we did a little linguistics look at love. And the problem in the English language is there's one word for love, which socially limits the way we think about it. It's like very limiting, right? What's in a name? In Sanskrit, there's 90 plus words for love. In Greek, there's a bunch. you know, there's aloha, which can mean like love, hello, goodbye, like, you know, I mean, shalom, like we could go on. And so what we say in the book is like, just don't use love. You can pick a different word, because don't let the English language tamp down what the actual feelings of mutual respect and benevolence and common humanity are, because those are love too.
The other thing that if you want to move a culture or someone to get comfortable with love, or if you have an executive coaching client that wants to get comfortable with love, we kind of start with the definition that Sarah alluded to. So we use the affection based on admiration, benevolence, or common interest. And you can substitute benevolence for kindness, but you can also just talk about admiration, kindness, and common interest. I mean, I think about this as I'm concerned about our country right now. No matter our political divide, we have this country that is our country. And if we can find kindness for each other and admiration for differences, and just get into like what we have in common instead of how we're different, I think we can heal. We can heal anything. I mean, I like to say that nothing becomes less if you throw love at it. Right. So whatever problems you have, whatever challenging relationships you have, whatever political divides we have, if we can throw admiration, common interests, and kindness at it, it can only get better. There's lots of books, and I interview authors about love and compassion, as does Sarah, and Chelsea knows a lot about it too. There's, I think at the core, it's, you can even just use the word good. Let's all find some good. I like that our partner, the Greater Good Science Center, thinks about the collective and thinks about the word good. So, but words are really important, and compassionate leadership is ethical and it's also effective, right? So sometimes we have to start with folks, sometimes around this stuff actually improves your ROI. Doesn't really matter if we start there. It's sometimes better to start there. I mean, I think about the movement to renewable energy. And when it started and I was involved in that, it was very expensive, right? And now solar power has become cheaper than any type of power. So it's hard to argue against renewable energy, although some people are trying despite that. And our ceremony to honor the 2026 CLC award winners, honorees, will be on April 30th. So we hope that you'll come back and see us then.
One more question that we got with, how do you best begin a revolution from the place of $10 trillion industry in place of a $10 trillion industry with a gap and opportunity to build justice into the new systems as the current ones fall apart? How do you account for the ones easily discarded we call oppressed populations? That's a brain buster, Laurel. What do you got?
Start with what you know and who you know, and we will help you. That's the short answer. We are reigniting our podcast with this episode and others. And our podcast is about history, healing, and hope. So I think right now when things are challenging and you want to be a revolutionary, I think it's good to go back to history and find case studies where things worked and learn from those case studies. Chelsea and I recently had a long discussion about suffrage. It's important to look into history and see when times when things felt impossible and things did change. It's important to take care of yourself as the head of the revolution. We're not going to be able to help other people or make changes if we aren't healthy and sane. So I would say, Lizzie, for you and other people that want to make changes, find a team. It's, you know, find a community and we will support you all the way. I do think we have a lot of problems to solve. And I don't think any problem can't be solved.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.